Nice to talk to you again. Thanks for making the time, man. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you guys?
We're good. We're good. We're trying. I'm efforting to not be really bummed out about Jarmo Kekäläinen sounding 4 hours into free agency like he was ready to close up shop and go to the cottage, because there are still some big pieces of business that might get done in the league, and I think a lot of us felt like he was going to be a big player at the table. And it's not to say that they didn't move heaven and earth to try to make things happen, but nothing did really. I like the Zellweger move, whatever, to replace Byram, but the big move draft night, oh, they've got the fourth pick and the 20th pick, nothing really came of it. How are you viewing the Sabres at this moment in time, with not having really done anything other than hope the kids can replace Alex Tuch?
Yeah, it feels like a bit of a half step back, and you don't want to give, you know, the front office a grade just yet, because we got months to go till training camp opens, and there's still the possibilities of some big moves. But you think about losing Bowen Byram and losing Alex Tuch, and I understand why. Like, you look at the Byram contract, my goodness, yeah. And the Tuch contract. And so I understand the GM walking away and not wanting to extend those guys, because they're really getting paid quite a pretty penny. But to bring no one in, when you look at the Atlantic Division landscape and the Florida Panthers getting Brady Tkachuk, expected to have a fully healthy season of Alexander Barkov, the Toronto Maple Leafs go out and get two of the bigger fish on the free agency market, and Darren Radish, they kind of jumped the queue there with Tampa in a sign and trade, and then Sergei Bobrovsky to shore up their goaltending. Some of the two that those are two teams that missed the playoffs in the Atlantic that made big moves. So, you know, if you're Ottawa, if you're Buffalo, if you're Montreal, you're probably a little bit concerned that, you know, your GM hasn't done a whole lot, and that is going to be one competitive division. And as it stands right now, I'm not sure the Sabres took a step forward. Now, you hope there's some natural growth, just mm-hmm. the fact that you guys got a young team in that city, and you hope the playoff experience served all those young guys well, and they come in confident, and, you know, they finish the season so strong. You hope some of that carries over. But you need people. And the Connor Hellebuck rumors falling through and not materializing in a trade, you know, you hope Jarmo's not done, put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I was in here on July 1st doing this show, and it's often one of the it's not even that weird. It's a depressing day to be in here as a Sabres fan for as many years as Mike and I have been doing this show, Luke, that it like the Sabres often leave you wanting at trade deadline day and on July 1st. And I know you can make a lot of mistakes on July 1st, especially in free agency. But, like, you know, thinking about the trade stuff and all of it, and I mentioned how, like, Jarmo's talking at 4 o'clock like they're done, and, like, man, it's only been like the market's been open for 4 hours. What are we doing? None of these trades have happened. But one thing that did get complicated, more complicated from the Sabres standpoint, is at noon on July 1st, last Wednesday, Josh Norris has a 10-team trade, no trade list that kicks in. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has a 5-team no trade list. You know, I don't know that Winnipeg has to be on it, but he suddenly has power to say there are 5 places I don't want to go. And would it shock anyone if Winnipeg were on that list, just like Buffalo has been on a lot of teams' lists or a lot of players' lists? So I worry about that they waited maybe too late. And maybe it's not all their fault. Like, maybe Winnipeg was you know, not willing to move on it at a time when they could have moved on it. But I just think things got more complicated now with no move clauses on the Sabres end of things.
No, for sure they do. And that's always been the challenge. I think for sure that's a challenge with Winnipeg. They might lead the league. I don't know this for sure, but just from what I do know, they would be up there in terms of cities that appear most on no trade clauses. Buffalo's in there. Edmonton, you know, pre-McDavid and probably post-McDavid, it ranks pretty high. Columbus as well. So it's tough for these cities, right? And the fact that general managers toss out no trade clauses and no move clauses as freely as they do. I mean, you guys experienced that firsthand at the trade deadline, right, with the whole Colton Parayko mess. Like, my goodness. So it does complicate things. But, you know, there's cap space, and I would like to think the momentum that Buffalo had towards the second half of the season, you know, winning a round in the playoffs, being a team that has a young core and looks like it's on the come up, general manager that seems to have more of a vision, at least, than the last one. You'd like to think those things are working in the team's favor. But, you know, I wonder if there's any free agents that are still out there. Like, maybe it's just a romantic idea, but the idea of Patrick Kane, like, what are we, day six of free agency, and he still hasn't found a home? That's a little curious. I mean, some of these veterans are taking their time. Claude Giroux just decided to re-up in Ottawa after poking around. But I wonder about Kane. I wonder if, you know, a guy like Anthony Mantha, who's still out there, if you know, he drops his price because, you know, there wasn't the frenzy around him on July 1, as some might expect. If there's another piece you could add to your forward group, because I feel like the wings, especially with Tuck leaving, is an area of need.
Luke, and I know you had, I think earlier this week, that, you know, there was some signs that the Sabres and Patrick Kane had some mutual interest. Bulldog and I were talking about it earlier. It like, they've got kind of this, I don't know, middling logjam of a bunch of forwards, right? And we've heard Jack Quinn's name being talked about in the potential trade market, Ryan McLeod's name being talked about in the trade market. Other than kind of your point of like, oh, it would be a good story, is there a real hockey story in there of what Patrick Kane could do for the Sabres, other than maybe help a power play that struggled, I think, pretty mightily at times last year?
Well, for sure he can help a power play. You know, going into free agency day, I think he was number one or number two of all the forwards available in terms of assists last year. And yeah, for sure he's past his prime, but he can still pass a puck. He can still make a play. So if you get him at a reasonable rate and preferably only on a one-year deal, you know, maybe he's pressing for two. I'm not sure, but a lot of these guys will settle for 1 year, and then you load it up with performance bonuses. I mean, that's the way to keep the cap hit low. So whether that's points or whether that's a bonus for how far they go in the playoffs, but I think as long as expectations are reasonable, right? You're not getting Patrick Kane in his prime. You're getting a guy that for sure can help a power play, can, you know, play on your second line and contribute some playmaking. If there's an injury, maybe he can spend a week or two up on the top line and he won't look out of place. And then also the other thing, like I spent a couple times in the Red Wings room last year asking guys about him, and they just raved about his character and his leadership. And they spoke about him a way a lot of Sabres talked to me about Alex Tuck. I mean, that's something that, you know, was also lost. It's not just Tuck's promotion, production and penalty killing. You lost a leader. And I think Patrick Kane could fill that void. I mean, there's a lot of young guys, and I think Dahlin's a heck of a captain. But, you know, having someone in there who's won a cup, who's been through multiple situations and battles and dealt with different coaches, I think, you know, he can help out with some of the intangibles as well. You don't want to overpay for that stuff, but, you know, if he can be tempted to join a team that got into the playoffs, finished the career in the hometown, like maybe there's a path there.
Luke Fox, NHL writer for Sportsnet on the West Her Hotline with us here on WGR. How about goaltending? We'll leave the Hellebuck conversation over there for now. Do you think the Sabres need to do something there? I know, you know, you got 13 games in the playoffs, and, you know, it was a roller coaster. You know, it's UPL's net, then it's Lions' net, then it's UPL's net, then it's Lions' net, then it's UPL. I think that's it. That's the run of it in the 13 game. That's how it went. But 82 games in the regular season, Luke, the goaltending was a strength of this team, both UPL and Lion, even Colton Ellis when he was called on, but especially Lion and UPL, I think, played, you know, their goals saved above expected were both excellent. I think Lion might have been second or third in the whole league on the year, and UPL was maybe in the top 10. So they had a good year. I could be convinced it's good enough despite, you know, what happened in the playoffs. Like, I've been telling people, the goal that beat the Sabres ultimately at the end of Game 7 is a knuckle puck shot that Connor Hellebuck could just as well give up, or any goalie you want. So, you know, it gets really fine. I know it's the playoffs and you got to come through. Do you think, I'm saying a lot of words here just to ask you, think the Sabres goaltending is good enough if they do stand pat?
It's fine. I think it's fine to stand pat.
I think fine.
Well,
I know, it's, I mean, perfect.
But there's probably 25 teams in the league that, you know, fine is good enough for goaltending. Like, there were question marks about the Carolina Hurricanes setup, and they much like Buffalo, had a three-goalie rotation for chunks of the season, and they won a Stanley Cup with Freddie Anderson, of all people, playing great through two rounds, falling off, falling injured, and then Brandon Bussey, this undrafted journeyman, steps up in the biggest games. You know, if a guy like Hellebuck is available, absolutely, you try to grab him. Workhorses like him, you know, he's got a Hart Trophy, he's got multiple Vezinas, he's got a gold medal. You go out and try to get him. Otherwise, you know, who's available? Aiden Hill? Like, is he really an upgrade at this point? Vegas didn't trust him to play a single minute in the playoffs. Jordan Binnington? I don't know. You know, I'm not convinced that he has it anymore, to be quite honest, guys. So I don't know if those guys are clear, absolute upgrades from what the Sabres have already. Hellebuck for sure is. So, you know, you keep poking around there. But Hellebuck has term on his contract. He hasn't been traded yet. I wouldn't give up hope on that. But if it gets to training camp and you got to go in with Lion and UPL, you do it. And, you know, see how it goes. You know, maybe the Sabres get off to a hot start. Maybe goaltending's not an issue. If it becomes an issue, what I've learned is that goalies become available as the season goes on, whether it's the waiver wire or whether it's, you know, a team looking to make a deal. And generally, they're not that expensive on the trade market. I mean, Toronto traded Joseph Woll to Philadelphia, who was, you know, at times their number one. And what did they get back? They got a mid-round pick, and they got a third-pairing defenseman. Like, you can make a trade for a goalie if you run into issues.
I do like what, and I alluded to this earlier when I was sort of setting up the overall on the Sabres offseason so far. Where are you at on them maybe potentially looking for Zellweger to replace Byram? Because I think it's a bet I would make. It's not you're not, you know, sure to win it, but it's a reasonable enough bet. I think style-wise, even complete with maybe some defensive shortcomings, that Byram, you know, played through them and still had a fantastic year and a great first round. I thought he was their best player against Boston, Luke. But I like the Zellweger bet. I think, you know, at the money and the cost to acquire the player, I think it's a move that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and especially at the money that Chicago gave Byram, like, you're not going to match that. Plus the you know, buzz that Byram wanted out, that was over a year old. So I like the move. You grab a younger version, and you get a guy that should be highly motivated. So Zellweger was scratched for a bunch of games in the playoffs by Anaheim, who suddenly looked like they could use a guy like that. They lost three defensemen, and with the offer sheet, they're in big money trouble all of a sudden. But you get a guy that should be highly motivated, because he probably is coming to Buffalo thinking, well, my last team didn't trust me enough to use me in a lot of minutes. I'm going to prove, you know, fresh start with a new coach. Coach's eyes on me, new uniform. He should be highly motivated to come out of the gates flying. I like the bet on youth, bet on a guy who hasn't had his payday yet, is still looking for it. So he should be motivated to get his ice time. He should be motivated to get his money, and hopefully, you know, the Sabres get the best version of this guy, and he's not at his prime yet. So I like the move there.
How much blame do you think Anaheim deserves for leaving themselves vulnerable to this Carlson offer sheet? Like, is there how much traction does, not that it matters now, because we're living in the world where he's got a $18 million a year offer sheet he signed with the Flyers, but right away there's stuff making the rounds about how he said last year he would have taken like nine for eight or whatever, and here we are. I mean, it feels like maybe Verbeek worked himself into a pretty very, very difficult spot.
Yeah, and I almost think there's a little bit of arrogance to it. I know the Edmonton Oilers had some of that going on when they lost two players that they sure could have used in Holloway and Broberg when the Blues offer sheeted them. And it was kind of like, well, they're not going to go anywhere. Like, we'll get around to them. There are our RFAs. But Leo Carlson, you have a number one center, and you don't really engage in contract negotiations with him for a full year. I mean, he was eligible to re-sign July 1 of 2025. And Verbeek has kind of been of the mode with his RFAs that we're going to, you know, play hard ball. We're going to try and keep our internal cap pretty low, and we'll get around to it. Like, there wasn't a lot of dialogue between the sides throughout the season. Same thing with Cutter Gauthier. But he's actually one of the rare RFAs who's ineligible for an offer sheet, so he can't sign one. But, you know, take care of your own business. And I think actually the Sabres have been at the forefront of that, even back to Kevin Adams, like, or you look at this season with Josh Stone. Zach Benson, how much cheaper would he have been if you got ahead of it, right? If you recognize and identify that a guy is a core piece of what you're trying to build, the sooner you take care of them, the better, because the price only goes up. And they probably had no idea. I mean, I'm sure they thought, other teams would like to offer sheet him, but offer sheet him to the tune of making him the highest paid player by annual cap hit in the whole league, that probably never crossed their mind. And there's probably a little bit of revenge going on, right? The Philly Anaheim, there's no love lost there. So, I think Verbeek deserves a lot of blame. And now he's pinned in the corner because either he lets his number one center go and you lose all the momentum you gained by beating the Oilers and getting to round two of the playoffs and feeling like this fun, fast, young team, or you match it and then Cutter's knocking on your door saying, okay, well, I may not be a center, but I'm a 40 goal scorer. You better get my AAV close to his, and you blow the whole thing out of whack. And Verbeek had done a pretty good job of up until this point, but now he's paying the price.
Luke, I wanted to ask you too, I mean, in the same vein in this conversation, like, this isn't going to maybe be a catalyst for more regular or maybe even a Connor Bedard. I mean, there are more guys that are offer sheet eligible this year and even going into next year. Is this finally, like, which I think every sports radio host would hope is, like, is this the thing that finally makes offer sheets kind of, you know, great again? Like, are we going to see more of them, I guess, is the question now that we saw this. And I also maybe want to throw in a question about Jason Robertson too and his future, because I think there is some questions about what's going to happen in Dallas there as well now that he is, filing for arbitration.
Yeah, well, on the offer sheet thing, I do think what's happened here is all of a sudden – teams have cap space to spend, so they can spend that on an offer sheet. And the other thing is, there's this trend of no one reaching unrestricted free agency. So if you're a team like Philadelphia that's trying to take a step and you know, there, you have some traction, but you're missing a key piece like a number one center, how do you get one? No one wants to trade one. Who is the best center available at this free agency? Boone Jenner, like a banged up third line center probably, or Scott Laughton? Like, there was no centers available. So if you're trying to improve your team, you need a center. They don't become available because teams have the space to lock up their own guys and they don't let them reach free agency. This is one of the only tools you have. So I do think, you know, there's a possibility we could see it. Now, to my knowledge with Connor Bedard, I don't think he's looking to do that. And Chicago has the cap space to match, and they would have to do that with Bedard, because without Bedard, they have nothing, and they have tons of cap space. So they would match it in a blink, even if it was for $20 million. So I wouldn't be too worried about him going elsewhere. But on the Jason Robertson thing, well, he filed for arbitration, so that means he's no longer eligible mm-hmm. for an offer sheet once the player files for arbitration. So either it goes all the way to the arbiter in late July, early August, and he makes a ruling on Robertson gets X amount of dollars on a one-year deal, and he's only 1 year away from UFA status. So this basically assures that he's going to be a Dallas star unless they trade him. But it sounds like he's blocking trades, right? He already blocked one to St. Louis and one to Seattle. I think he wants to stay in Dallas. He just wants a big payday. So he's going to get a one-year massive payday at the very worst. And then, you know, they either walk him out the door, because once you sign a guy to a one-year deal through arbitration, you can't trade him. So the player holds all the cards. So even though technically he's an RFA, he's basically acting like a UFA with one more year to spend in Dallas, and then he could walk out the door, or they need to pony up and give him the kind of payday he's looking. He wants to be the highest paid player on the team. They're hesitant to go much over what they're already paying Mikko Rantanen, which is 12.5. But, you know, you see the price of price of poker's going up, like with the cap. So he's gonna get his money.
Luke, I saved it for the end, and we're just about out of time. So I don't know if you got like a minute in you on what the Leafs have done. You mentioned the big moves. I can see that they're going to be faster, which could make them better defensively overall, like, you know, 200 feet defending with better speed overall. But that's about the best I can do. I mean, I even like the Radish contract, because I was worried somebody was going to give him Bowen Byram's contract. I think even if he regresses to, like, you know, 55 points from the 70 or whatever he had and 15 goals instead of the 20, it's still a reasonable enough bet. What do you think about what the Leafs have done so far?
Yeah, they remade their bottom six with some new faces, so that feels fresh, but those are mostly minor moves. Bobrovsky and Radish are the big ones, and Radish to me is, like you mentioned, I think he has the one that should make the most impact. Big booming right shot from the point, something they've never had. That to me says if the Leafs are going to be successful, they better have a top five power play in the league. So they have Gavin McKenna, they locked into him, they still have Nylander and Matthews and Tavares, and then you got a threat from the point. So teams have to respect the point, which they didn't have to do with Morgan Riley up there, because he was a pure facilitator. He would always pass it off. And that should open up lanes for Matthews and Nylander to get their shots off. And this is going to be a more offensive team, should be a faster team, and it should be a team that kind of lives and dies by its power play.
Luke, thanks so much for the time. We always appreciate it.
I think the biggest victory for them last year was obviously making the playoffs. But I think the second biggest victory was they restored respect to the sword. Like, Connor Hellebuck was willing to waive to go there. I think Vincent Trocheck was very interested in going there. That wasn't happening a year ago. The Sabres are a different animal now. They're respected. Hey, that team's pretty good.
That's Elliot Friedman on his 32 Thoughts podcast on the Sabres. Is he still doing that podcast, or is he also going to a lake for the
summer? That
was the
final 32 Thoughts of
the season.
That was
the final?
Yeah, so they're taking some time off.
I mean, all these insiders are going away for their vacations, and I feel like the league hasn't done the things yet. I guess the Ducks matched the offer sheet, so we did get that. Marty Baron now on the Wester Hotline. Good morning, it's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy is off this morning. A little bit of a rainy day here. Marty, we're supposed to be playing golf later, and we'll probably be fine, right?
I think so. This is my first time this year playing, so I'm okay. Like, it can be raining, so let's go. And it should be a beautiful afternoon. That's what I'm going with.
The last thing you want in your first golf round of the year, I think, is the grass being, like, sopping wet. That would terrify me. But you'll do fine today. We'll do fine today.
So, like I said in our text group, it won't affect my game, good or bad.
It's gonna stay the same. Well, we'll see. We'll have some fun a little bit later on. And before we get to the Sabres, Marty, do you have a thought on the Leo Carlson offer sheet being matched? I meant to get to it this morning. We haven't had time yet. I really didn't think they would match it. Maybe a lot of people in the league did. And now I'm not as much thinking about the Ducks as the Flyers. Like, Danny Briere was so aggressive on that offer sheet, and they have the most cap space left in the league. And again, I feel like a lot of the star players in the league haven't moved yet, so I don't know. I feel like Philly is like a real team to watch here, even though we're, you know, 10 days past free agency starting.
Yeah, no, they absolutely are. I thought the Ducks were going to match, but that doesn't mean that if they match, and they did, that they're happy about it. And that also doesn't mean that Pat Verbeek didn't absolutely butcher this summer for the Anaheim Ducks. Look, they had about $40 million in cap space. Now, because they were offer sheeted on Carlson at $18 million, they signed A.J. Greer at a contract that they didn't have. They have Minchikov on the back end that they gave $7 million per year. They don't have enough money for Cutter Gauthier. And I think they'll sign Cutter Gauthier and they'll go over the cap in the summer because you're allowed to go over the cap by 10% in the summer. But when it's, you know, opening night roster, you got to be cap compliant. So they absolutely butchered the summer. And Pat Verbeek, like that press release yesterday by ownership saying Pat Verbeek intelligently managed the cap and gave us enough room to be able to match. I mean, that's just crap. Like, it's just they're in a bad position. Now, the four first rounder were not enough of a compensation. A first rounder in 27, 28, 29, and 30, that's nothing. Like, if it was four first rounder in 1 year, it would be different. But one a year for 4 years, that's not enough of a compensation. So I felt like they were going to match. Now, Danny Briere is going to turn around and potentially look at Adam Fintilli of the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's not going to look at Connor Bedard because Bedard's got the shoulder surgery, and you know that's a different situation. But who knows? Maybe there's a conversation with Dylan Larkin and saying, "Listen, I know we're not on your list. You have Minnesota, Florida, Dallas, whatever, but maybe you would want to come to Philly. We have a number one center spot open." So I think he's going to be aggressive to continue to make his team better. But I felt like Anaheim were going to match. And I actually was surprised it took him long. But I guess it's all part of the gamesmanship. Because when Philly put the offer down on Leo Carlson, that money is tied up. It's basically Philly's cap hit until Anaheim matches. So that's the gamesmanship that's going on.
Right. That's why it took 6 days. And they are back to having almost $30 million in space. If they didn't have the history they did with Cutter Gauthier, I would think, well, I'll just turn around and offer sheet him. But,
they can't. They're not. Cutter Gauthier can't be offer sheeted because he's at 10.2C. Like, it's a weird thing.
Right.
So,
okay,
Anaheim is lucky because they would have been exposed to Leo Carlson getting on offer sheet and then another team coming in and offer sheeting Cutter Gauthier. So they at least they got that. They're lucky with that.
Right. He's ineligible for an offer sheet. So we'll see. Right. Fantilli would be interesting, or maybe they're looking for a bigger trade idea. Robertson hasn't been moved yet. Well, Marty, what about for the Sabres and how aggressive they'll be from here to the start of the season? I think they could be done. I think that's what a lot of fans are trying to figure out, just is this it? And I don't even think it's a problem if this is it. But let's start with Hellebuyck at this point, because there still seems to be an expectation that he will get moved. And if that is the case, I don't know who really is in it other than Buffalo and maybe Carolina. I wonder where you stand on the age part for him and whether he's really worth courting as a big idea like this at age 33. I've tended to think that it's not a non-starter for me at all because there are so many star goalies that have played really well into their late 30s. But where do you stand on
that? Sergei Bobrovsky won back-to-back cups at 34 and 35. Bobrovsky plays a much more athletic, younger man type of game. Connor Hellebuck is very economical in the way that he plays. It's about positioning. It's about size. It's about reading of the play. I have zero problem with the age for Connor Hellebuck, and I still think that even if he was 35, 36, and look, this contract is going to take him all the way to age 38, I have no problem with that. I think that he will be productive at a later age, and that is fine. It reminds me a lot of, and this may not go well with a lot of Sabres fans in a way, but Ed Belfour. Like, Ed Belfour was so economical in the way that he played. And he played until he was a lot older. And a lot of goalies did back then. Like, Patrick Roy was very economical in the way that he played. The butterfly, the positioning and all of that. Now, all of the goalies start with more athleticism to their game. And then as they get older, they adjust. And I think that Connor Hellebuck, over the last few years, you can see that this is a goalie that's going to be good for a long time still. So I have zero problem with that. And I do think that Winnipeg is in a bit of a kind of a tricky situation here because, yeah, obviously Hellebuck can go back to Winnipeg and play for the Jets this year. But are you so far down the road now that it's like, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to get Hellebuck back, but he's not going to be happy to be here, and we should just make the move, right? Yeah. I think that Winnipeg maybe overplayed their hand before the draft. They were demanding. They wanted a certain return, and maybe the Sabres weren't willing to give it in. Mm-hmm. I think now it may soften a little bit. So, I mean, I'm not as confident as I was before the draft saying that Connor Hellebuck will be a Buffalo Sabres. But I think it's still a possibility moving forward.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think, you know, going back in with him next year would just be uncomfortable. And I don't even know that I mind that in some instances, but how do NHL teams generally operate? Like, we just saw this with Brady Tkachuk a little bit, and it's happened in the past. I mean, Eichel here and other instances. Larkin maybe in Detroit, Yzerman's acting as though he'll be different on this. But I feel like generally, if a guy wants out or it's known that a guy might want out, the team usually just moves off of it and they don't go through whatever turbulence they would have with bringing him back to camp and then in the season. Because, I mean, other players would know that too as that's happening.
Yeah, and it feels like I don't want to say there's an easy deal to be made here, but I think you can... Everybody can kind of see, okay, Connor Hellebuck, what is the return for that? Well, a goalie is a return. A first-round pick is a return. Maybe an established player, forward, right, is a return. And then maybe there's a prospect in there. Maybe there's not. Like, but I think there's a perimeter that you know is going to happen. Like, for Dylan Larkin, for example, in Detroit, I don't know what that deal looks like. Mm-hmm. Like, he's only wanting to go to three or four teams. So that puts Detroit in a bad place. And maybe Detroit is like, you know, we're not trading you because we're not getting the return that we should. I think we all know that Winnipeg is going to get a decent return, at least close enough to what maybe they would want for Hellebuck. So that's, you know, the bringing back Hellebuck in training camp for next year is not the best option for the Winnipeg Jets.
Marty Baron with us. By the way, Marty, do you know what age you were for your career best save percentage? Take a guess.
The weird thing with me is that early in my career, I played in, you know, when there was two-line passes.
Right.
And there was, you know, all of that. And so the speed game and everything, so it may have changed, but I think my first year with the Rangers may have been my best one, and that would be when I was 33.
Nailed it, 33, which is exactly how old Connor Hellebuck is, just throwing that out there. Another example, right? Marty at his career best at 33, Hellebuck 33 years old. So you could see that happen. You're right. You're like, yeah, the difference in the eras was, you know, wild from the beginning of your career.
But this was like, I mean, I would have, at first guess, I would have said before the 04 or 05
lockout
would have been better because, you know, like, say percentages, I mean, Dominic Hasek, 937 or whatever. Right. You're never going to see that again. I don't think so. Right. But, no, it just somehow happened to be when I was a little older. Wiser, they say, wiser. Yeah.
Do you think, as this team is currently constructed, Mario, let's say they don't really do anything else major, you know, they have to sign Peyton Krebs still, but otherwise the team is mostly intact. Do you think there is enough potential internally for them to be better next season than they were last year? And that's a high bar, right? That's winning the division. That is a goal away from the conference finals. They lose Tuck and Byram. Do you think there is enough in this group to not even just be as good as they were a year ago, but even be better than it?
There is potential, but it's a little bit harder to project or predict because the potential to be better would come from players that are unproven, right? The potential to be better would be, well, with a Josh Norris for the full season. Well, that's never really happened all that often. So I can't really, you know, put all my chips in the middle of the table and say they're going to be better because Josh Norris is going to play 78 games. I can't put all my chips in the middle and say they're going to be better because, well, Kulik is going to be an added bonus. Well, he missed a whole year, basically. So I don't know what that's going to be like. Or Hellenius, he was great. But now, you know, how is he going to be for, you know, 2, 3, 4 months in a row being in the NHL? And Crevier, I really like. And Zellweger, I really like. And so I think that there is potential to be better than last year, but there's a lot of question marks with players that it's hard to project what they're going to be. Do I think Josh Doan is going to be even maybe better than last year? Yes, I think there's a progression there, and I can really see that happening. Same with Zach Benson, same with a few others. But obviously, with a Connor Hellebuck, then for me, it's like, okay, Florida, Toronto, Montreal, like those teams are well, mostly Florida and Toronto are taking steps forward. How do you stay in that race? I think that with Connor Hellebuck, it would be easy to say, oh, they're going to be much better because they got a stud goalie. But I still think there's a chance they're better than last year with the team that they have right now. I absolutely love the team they have right now. I think that group of four is awesome. I like their back end, even though they lost Bo Byram. But last year I was saying the same thing about, oh, I love Kesselring coming in. And it wasn't a good year for Kesselring because he was injured. And then he gets traded. So there's still that chance that maybe one or two of the pieces that need to be so good are going to take maybe a step back.
Who's the of like the quote unquote unproven guys that just that we haven't seen for full seasons yet? Who is the one that's most important for you on that? Like, is it Hellenius? Because I feel like the expectation for him after the end of the year and the World Championships, like I don't know, like if he's a number one center for them immediately, like that's where I would start getting to. All right, they could be better than they were last year. If you get him or somebody else that's like in the Calder conversation.
See, for me, I think it's Jiří Kulík because I think that Jiří could be a 30 plus goal guy.
Yep.
And I'm not saying, you know, the Moneyball reference is not like we're trying to replace Alex Tuck's goals, but we're trying to replace scoring chances, shots on goal. And I'm like, I think that's Jiří Kulík. I think that's the guy that can maybe not only replace the goals, but replace that offense. Maybe even replace power play, kind of production. And that's where I'm looking at. Now, you know, we talk about Connor Hellebuck, and I know that the Patrick Kane name has been out there. Funny enough for me, I think that if the Sabres were to make a Hellebuck move at some point, if that happens, I think there's more of a chance that Patrick Kane is also a move because you would be losing mostly a forward in that transaction. So you'd have to replace that. If they don't make the Connor Hellebuck move and it doesn't come to a resolution, then I think it's very hard to see a Patrick Kane move because you've got too many forwards as it is. and good forwards to rely on. And the Yuri Kulik is, for me, the guy that would be the one that holds a bit of a key to the offense next year.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it on the Kane idea. We were doing this yesterday, like putting like just lines together, like if tonight was opening night. And you're right, like choosing who to leave out of the lineup right now is difficult. That if they were to sign Kane, and I do think there's merit to that idea, like he would help them on the power play. And I would to see them get help on the power play. But then you have to figure out another guy that's coming out. And you're right, like without a trade somewhere else, they're just this is filed under good problems to have, right? Like they have 13, 14, 15 forwards that all feel like they're worthy of playing if tonight was opening night.
Yeah, but the problem that's going to be opening night or towards the end of the training camp is, well, do you still have three goalies?
Right.
And if you do, so now you only have room for 13 forwards and 7 defensemen, or do you keep 14 forwards and 6 defensemen with your three goalies? Like, this is where, again, we're going to be discussing the same thing in camp as we did last year, and maybe even at the start of the season is, oh, who's the extra guy? Is Peyton Krebs the extra guy? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, as it is right now, if you have Benson, Norris, Thompson, McLeod, Quinn, Zucker, the kids, Carrick, Malenstein, it's like, whoa, like there's a lot of players there. Where does that leave space for Krebs, who was fantastic last year and most likely going to go to arbitration and get paid at least on a 1-year deal? So that is going to be another one of those. Well, Lindy Ruff has got his work cut out for him to be able to manage and try to see how that all works out for opening night.
Yeah, the numbers crunch is there for sure. Last thing for you, Marty, and then we'll let you go. Anytime I see anybody doing, like, and I've done this too because we've done it, like putting together like what a lineup might look like for next year at least at the start of the year, Thompson is always on the wing from at least what I see. Like, are you also subscribing to the idea that he is going to play more on the wing going forward? I think that's maybe where we thought we were going to end up last year, but then they ran into injuries and he played a lot of center and there was some back and forth. Like, is he just a winger, you feel like, for this year because they have so many other guys that can play center?
Well, that's a luxury. I mean, every coach is going to tell you, I love that I can have many players playing center. Now, Tage Thompson last year was funny because himself, he was like, I like playing center better. Right. And then Lindy was like, oh, well, his production is maybe better on the wing. So it was a little internal kind of back and forth. And he ends up playing center most of the season and has a great year. But at the Olympics, he wasn't in the middle of the ice. Now, can there be a switch and, you know, during the play or whatever? Absolutely. But the way that I see it right now, I think there's going to be a little competition in camp. And the competition may not be just Tage Thompson, but I think Norris and McLeod are centers. So who is your other center? Is it going to be Hoslin? Is it Hellenius? Is it Thompson? I think there is going to be an internal competition to see what fits best for that other center spot. And it doesn't mean it's third line center. If Tage is a center, Tage goes to the top and you have Norris as a second line and McLeod maybe as a third line center. But if you move Thompson to the wing, you go Norris, McLeod, and Austin, and then Carrick as a fourth line. It's really good as well. So
yeah.
I think there's options, and options are fine. But I would venture a guess that Tage is going to play a lot of center this year. Maybe he doesn't start in the middle, but he's going to work his way back there.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I almost feel like I'm looking at the list right now. Like, if Norris and McLeod are just here, that almost feels to me like, by ice time, like that's second and third line center. And then I'm battling for my number one center between Tage, Hellenius, and Kulik, maybe two I would want to throw in there. You threw him in there earlier. So, yeah, camp for like that position specifically is going to be really entertaining, I think, and interesting, to say the least. Because I feel like it's crazy. They didn't mention Kozak, Danforth. I know those are lower level guys for this. Krebs is unsigned. Oslin, they just have so many centers or guys that can at least play center.
But do you feel like the way it ended in the playoffs last year with Benson, Norris, and Thompson on a line?
Yep.
Do you feel like that's the natural way to start next year?
I think so.
Say, hey, you know what? Like, Benny can work the corners. He's mm-hmm. tough to play against in front of the net. Norris, even though Josh Norris probably sees himself more as a goal scorer, and throughout his career he's more of a goal scorer, but I see him more of a playmaker now, and Tage is that finisher. I think there's a good fit for that line to start together next year.
I agree with that. And I think even more than that, like, I know Lindy has said this before and others have, that they really like pairings of forwards that are consistently together, and then sometimes the third guy will rotate. And Thompson kind of lost his partner, right? Because for 5 years, it was Tuck more than anybody.
Yeah.
And who's his partner going to be going forward? And I feel like I want to say Benson for that.
Yeah, that's the duo. You know, I think Kulik and Zucker, McLeod, and Quinn were a unit last year for a long time. Like, Lindy would switch the other two lines, but left these guys together a lot. But Kulik and Zucker have a kind of a thing. Like, they get along really well. Maybe they're together with McLeod, and then that leaves Quinn kind of on an island, because then you have maybe it's, Oslin, Hellenius, and Quinn, or Doan could be on there with the two kids, and then Quinn is on an island. Like, again, there's 10 forwards for me for the top nine.
Right.
And so somebody's not going to be happy unless there's, you know, somebody gets hurt and then everybody fits in the place.
Yep, we'll see as camp gets closer. And again, a trade could make a lot of this conversation easier if it happens in the next couple of months. Marty Baron, Sabres Live today at 12 o'clock. And you've got the Western New York Heroes Gala tonight, right, as well?
So this is great, because last year I was part of Western New York Heroes, the holiday gala, and Sal Capaccio obviously hosted the thing, and then he auctioned off a dinner in Ellicottville with Chris and his wife and whoever wanted to buy the dinner. And then, you know, like every live auction, there's always a time where things dies down a little bit. And then he's like, Marty, come on stage. He goes, you want to go to dinner? We're getting Marty to come to dinner with us. And then the betting kept going a little bit. So
right.
I added my my flair to it. So
right,
so
good.
That's why, like, we're all going to go, and you'll be there. Go golf and, you know, early afternoon, and then we got that dinner tonight in Ellicottville, which will be awesome.
Nice. Should be fun. Well, thanks for doing this, Marty, and I'll talk to you in a little bit.
Absolutely. See you later.
Thanks. Marty Baron on the Western Hotline, Sabres Live, 12 o'clock. They had Shayna Goldman on yesterday, by the way. Check that out. Really good interview. They also had Mark Pesek on from the butt goal,
The
of
butt
course.
Goal. 2 days ago they had that.
Revisiting
so that'll be
the butt goal a little bit.
Pesek, you guys, and Goldman. I love Shayna Goldman. She's awesome.
You guys are old enough to remember the butt goal, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's like the first year of the playoff drought, I think.
It was early.
He didn't play here very long after that.
No, I don't think so. I think that's right.
That's one of those guys that was like a Sabre first round pick that, like, before they played here, I'm like, oh, this guy's going to be so good. And they're like, yeah, he's fine. He's an NHL player.
Right.
Yeah, 2013. We were like 11 years old at that point.
Yeah,
so
I definitely remember that.
Yeah,
right,
for sure. Mike Smith was always quite a trip to watch. I had a guy tell me one time that I looked like Mike Smith when I played, and I took the most offense to that I could take to anything anyone could ever say about my hockey game.
Really?
I was so mad.
Really?
Oh, he's so sloppy and gross. He looked horrible playing the position.
The thing I remember about him more than anything is he just played the puck all the time.
He played the puck awesome. He was really good at that.
And it's funny, like, so your YouTube rabbit hole used to be like fun facts and like useful information about like different things around like the world. Mine are like compilations of like controversial sports moments, like whether it's like referees getting mad or like guys that are throwing dirty hits.
Sure.
One of them recently, Owen will love this one, was like a 12-minute compilation on goalies getting run. Oh, oh man. And I'm not lying to you. Half of it was Mike Smith.
Oh yeah.
He kept popping into this compilation. I'm like, it's Mike Smith again.
This guy looks like a psycho.
This is the seventh time.
Oh, he's crazy.
Yeah. And they were all crazy. Him playing the puck behind the net and getting run behind the net.
Yeah, because he would go back there and do it, and he would talk, and people would go back there and just like, this guy is so annoying. I am going to bulldoze him. And they would just annihilate. It was unbelievable. Yeah. He used to.
Ooh,
get
this is good. So you
run over.
You didn't like being compared to Mike Smith.
Oh, I hated it.
Who was your favorite comp?
Pekka Rinne was my guy.
That was your favorite one?
I was big and I played. I liked it because I was a big, giant guy that played like a little guy, and that was Rinne. Like, Rinne was a big, tall goalie that wore good gear and played like athletic, fun goaltender.
It's good.
And I liked to try to play like Rinne.
I'm more interested in other names that you didn't like being compared to.
Corey Crawford. Corey Crawford would drive me nuts.
Why?
Because his pads they stayed so straight on his legs that it looked like they were gonna stick up into his stomach. And it really bothered me how he wore his pads.
Oh.
And he's also on my like most punchable face list.
Really?
He does kind of have that look
I
to
can't
him.
I can stand just looking at his face.
Corey Crawford?
Yes.
Stanley Cup champion Corey Crawford is a punchable face?
Don't come at me with Stanley Cup champion. I know.
I mean, he won it.
Drives me nuts. I hated that.
This guy.
Yeah. The thing I always liked about Crawford is I thought he was a good goalie number. I liked 50 as a goalie number.
50 as a goalie number is fun.
It's
I do like that.
Interesting.
His pads, you're absolutely right about. I'm looking at a picture of him in his stance, and it's poking his midsection.
And there was a kid in Amarillo.
We're just reopening old
There
wounds.
Was a kid in Amarillo that wore his pads like that, and he would talk like crazy. And he's the kid that I tried to, that wouldn't cross the red line.
Oh,
the
you tried to fight
guy.
Him. Yeah.
Yes. And he was so annoying. He would drive me nuts, this kid. And I would try and fight him every time I saw him, and he wore his pads like that. And I hated him before I ever heard him talk because he wore his pads like Corey Crawford.
There's fun game potential for down the road here in the summer. If we just say a goalie and Owen reacts to
I could go,
whether or not he would be furious or happy if he was compared.
I like
I
that.
Could go very deep on that.
I like
that,
it.
That would be
keep that in the logs.
I'm writing that down. Jotting that down.
All right.
We got to take a break. Nick Mendola is coming up next on the World Cup quarterfinals. We still got to play World Cup of Joe. That's coming up as well here on WGR.
It's Mike Shope. And the Bulldog.
Coming up after this.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Don't roll your eyes. That was my audition tape for an NFL pregame show. I'm not kidding. That's what that was. That was us making fun of how they laugh at everything and nothing's funny. But they're just like, oh, gosh, you guys.
You know when you can just tell when someone's close to retirement?
Is this going to be about me?
Yeah, you know, like you when the guy is just kind of lost it a little, like you know, like when Jimmy Johnson, he's on Fox, and you're just like, yeah, he's so close.
Yeah,
like, that's you right now after listening to that open.
Yeah. I'm uncomfortable now. Nate Gary's in for Mike. I am the Bulldog. Happy to. Well, we'll just plow right ahead and welcome Joe Yurden in on the Wester Hotline. Joe from Bleacher Report, long time on the NHL beat and the Sabres as well. Joe, what is up? How are you doing? How's summer treating you so far, man?
I'm really afraid to laugh at anything now. When I'm really afraid.
Don't worry, I'm not funny. Naturally, so I'm unfunny, and it'll be fine. So don't sweat it.
No, I you know, mostly it's been a good summer, and I'm glad we don't have the $20 million offer sheets coming through here in Buffalo, because that would make things way too spicy. But yeah, it's nice and easy this summer.
Is a fireable offense? For Pat Verbeek, like I know they've matched it and they're gonna keep going, but like he left himself. Like there's been a lot of reporting. I read a long piece by Greg Wyshynski about them nickel and diming every $10,000 is a battlefield and all this sort of stuff. And coupled with the things that made the rounds right after the offer sheet was signed last week by Leo Carlson, that he would have signed for like eight for nine or whatever it would have been, and now they're at 5 for $18 a year. It's just a very, very, he left them in a bad spot, Verbeek.
I think it's, you know, just, and this is all from the outside, and, you know, sometimes what you hear from people chit-chatting about stuff, you know, around the league and whatnot, but just that, based on what you see on the outside, you see what happened with Trevor Zegras in Anaheim and how suddenly he was available, and Jamie Drysdale, and like these guys were all like young, upcoming, potential star players for Anaheim, and then it was time for their first contract negotiations, and things got very punchy right away, and it was like they're coming out of their ELC, man. Like, what's the deal here? Like, why is this so on the outside? I never mind what's going on the inside, but on the outside, it seemed like why is it? What's the hassle? Like, what's the problem here? And both of those guys end up getting traded to Anaheim, you know, not long after, and you're like, okay, what's the deal? What's happening here? And the only common denominator out of that was the GM. And you're like, is this guy just kind of busting everybody's chops about, you know, like what he thinks a guy coming out of that first contract, you know, can make, what they can do, all that. And I think that goes for just about everybody that was a big star player there. You know, Mintikov was another guy that I think even last year it was just kind of like, what's going on? Like, what's the deal here? And, you know, the adjustment period between things being the way it used to be and the way things are headed now changed in their face because of kind of how he was doing things. And, you know, that's, you know, it's not to say that's all on Pat Verbeek's shoulders. Other teams have dealt with this as well, but like, holy smokes, man. Like this, I mean, this went off like a bomb in front of their face. And they're just like, well, we got to kind of eat this.
Yeah.
And, you know, Carlson was Pat's guy. Like that's, you know, he's the number two pick. He's a big player. He's a guy that they've kind of built their future around. And, you know, kind of good on Danny Briere to be like, oh, yeah, well, how much does he mean to you? Let's see how bad, right. You know, and, you know, he did it. Now they got to figure it out after the fact. It's really fascinating. And it's really interesting about, you know, and I get it. It's going to cause, you know, reverberations through the league of how you treat guys coming out of those first contracts and whatnot, and you got to decide right away, like, is this a guy we're gonna build around forever, or is this somebody we're gonna push that cart down the road and say, all right, you know, maybe in 2 years we have to reexamine this. But I mean, if guys coming out of those ELCs are saying like, I want $9 million a year right away, boy oh boy, like it changes everything so quickly.
Yeah, man. I mean, I definitely feel that. I mean, I thought they would match. I thought they kind of had to match. You know, four first-round picks that you might assume will be in the 20s, especially if Carlson is on the Flyers. That's just not – that is not going to get it done. So, but now you've got Carlson, and he's a great piece to build around, and he, you know, maybe he'll hit his ceiling and become, you know, a 90 or 100-point player, but you're paying him double what you could have paid him last year. I mean, it's just – it's insane how that happened, and they left themselves like that. Something that, Joe, the Sabres really have been – quite proactive about going back. I mean, Kevin Adams certainly had his warts, but the Tage Thompson contract, the Matias Samuelson contract, and now you're seeing this Owen Power. You're seeing it be played forward by Jarmo Kekalainen with Zach Benson. You know, you look at the
and
stats.
Andone,
right? Yeah. You look at the stats and go, Benson had 43 points. What am I doing? But, you know, if you watched him all year and you watched him in the playoffs especially, I think you go, okay, that's probably a 55, 60-point player fully formed, and I've got him under contract for 7 years at 7.5. Like, that's, I think that's job well done.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Going back to Adams, you know, the Tage contract, I think even at the time when Tage signed, everybody goes, boy, that's already a steal. And if he becomes a 40-goal-a-year guy, that is a monster steal. And, of course it is. And then, you know, the Samuelson thing, obviously the ups and downs with his career. But if he does what he did last season every year at four and a quarter,
it's the best contract in the league.
Maybe holy cow, ever. Man! Yeah. You know, like, that's crazy. And you know, you're looking at all this, and like obviously the cost of everything is just going to go up every year. You know, every year the cap goes up, the cost of everything just goes up with it. But I mean, you know, you look at what happened with Doan. You know, Doan gets the opportunity, gets the playing time, gets that chance to show, like, here's what I can do. Because, you know, in Arizona, Utah, whatever, he was, you know, playing third, fourth line minutes and, you know, wasn't really getting a lot of specialized usage. And he was younger. You know, he's coming out of Arizona State, which, you know, no offense, Arizona State, not exactly a hockey hotbed school. So, like, you know, what he does there is kind of, you know, how do you really judge it?
Mm-hmm.
So you get him into the pros and you see what he does in the AHL and you're just like, all right, I know what kind of player he is. That's why, you know, half the people talking about that trade last year were like, well, he's a throw-in. And it's like, well, he's not, but like, we don't know what he is yet. And then turns out what he is a 20 goal a year, heart of the team type of dude. And you're like, oh, right. Okay. Well, cool. And in Benson's case, it's, you know, he had what, 43 points, 65 games, I think it was.
Yep.
And you see that and you're like, okay, it's coming. His game's coming along. And then the playoffs happen. And you're like, oh, all right. Okay. Well, let's see if we, you know, my idea was get him at the Doan contract if you can, but if it's like an extra mil, I think you live with it. And that's exactly how it came out. So, you know, things like that, it's just a matter of just like reading where things are headed, how things are going and what a player's projection is going to be. You know, you're not going to throw that money around at just some, you know, regular old guy. I mean, Leo Carlson's a great player and he had a great, you know, glow up kind of season for Anaheim. And, you know, you see the trajectory he's going on and you're like, okay, we got to pay this guy. We know we have to, but like, you got to control it too. You can't let somebody else dictate your budget. And I think that's where things kind of got out of hand with Anaheim. And you know, you let it get away from you for a year. You're like, well, we'll push that cart down the road. We'll do it next year. How much worse could it be? Like, well, now every guy going into that last year of their ELC is going to be having that long conversation with the GM, or maybe they aren't. I don't know. Like, but somebody who's an elite player, they're going to be looking at it in the mirror and going like, how much are we going to give to this guy and how do we expect him to go?
Before the playoffs, we talked about the, you know, the as much as fun as we were having with the moment and the present, you know, like, well, what's the off season? What are the priorities going to be? And Benson's name came up in here and I said, oh, that's a bridge. It's easy. That's a bridge contract. You're not really sure what his ceiling is yet. And then the playoffs happen and I'm like, yeah, okay.
Lock him up.
Right. Yeah. Joe Yurden from Bleacher Report on the Wester Hotline with us. So how about the Sabres? Like, are you – the vibe this week that I've mostly gotten, it started on Monday afternoon when I talked to Wyshynski, is that the kingpin guys that we thought would get moved, really none of them have been moved. That's Larkin, that's Hellebuck, that's Jason Robertson. I don't know mm-hmm. that Nyes belongs in that conversation. I guess I wish he would because I love him very, very much, almost too much. It hurts, Joe. So might we have a busier July than normal? Because I would think teams are going to, even if they'd be dragged kicking and screaming, are going to want to alleviate situations where guys have asked out.
You know, part of me thinks it was busy enough, honestly. Like, teams just like kind of took care of the business that was out there, but it still feels like a lot was left on the hook. And, you know, part of that's Robertson just because that was such a big deal. It will be a big deal. Whenever, you know, if he signs for 1 year, okay. Fast forward to next summer when we're talking about him again as maybe as a unrestricted free agent, which would be bonkers. You know, and, you know, all the Hellebuck stuff from before the draft, during the draft, and, you know, afterwards it cooled off. And, you know, anywhere I go now, folks are like, is this going to get done? Is this happening? And I'm like, I keep thinking, like, the time to get it done was the draft, just because the draft picks are whatever you want them to be. And when the draft picks are gone, it's like, well, all right, now we're kind of stuck based on the roster. And then you get past July 1st, and now you got no trade protections on guys. And it's like, okay, well, all right, how do you make this work out of that? It's like making something that could have been very easy into something very difficult. And I think that's maybe the spot we're in with some of these other players that were out there allegedly, you know, reported to be available, whatever, what have you. I think we're in a spot where it's a little bit more difficult because if you're offering roster guys, like, you know, July 1st kind of changes that. And teams, the NHL is so like old school set that everybody wants to get on vacation. Everybody wants to take a couple of months off because it's a 10-month rigor of day in, day out. Let's just try to get things done and figure it out. But I don't know, man. Like, Dylan Larkin's still out there. Jason Robertson will get his stuff figured out. Connor Hellebuck's still in Winnipeg. That's a lot of big fish. It's a lot of big fish who are still out there that could get moved. And there's teams that can make that happen. And I just wonder, you know, when those GM's phones get turned back on after they've spent some time at the cottage.
Marchenko's another name too, Joe, that's like kind of been out there for Columbus after the whole Werwinski was like, yes, but no, and now I'm dedicated and I'm, you know, moving forward here in Columbus. Yikes. But, you know, I've never been a huge, I know Joe, you know, Sneaky Joe on the Morning Show has sort of been, you know, ringing the bell for Hellebuck. I'm not sure that I've ever really been fully on board with them, especially trading young assets or even a roster player or two, which is what it sounds like it was, you know, going to take to get Hellebuck. And now I do wonder how much, you know, the Jets maybe have lost a little leverage in this Hellebuck conversation, and Yarmo waiting them out ends up being a nice goal for them and they end up paying less than they would have at the draft. I don't know. But I guess where I get to, Joe, is, you know, we're hearing guys like, you know, Jack Quinn's name being thrown around, Ryan McLeod's name being thrown around. I do wonder that right now they appear to be, and it sounds like Patrick Kane is a potential. They've got a lot of forwards. I don't know that I'm in the camp, Joe, and now you can tell me if you're in this camp or not, that like I'm going to move a couple of them and one, whether it's Mertka or one of these other young, you know, players you've drafted the last couple of seasons, but I'm kind of still big fish hunting for a legit number one center and or another scoring winger to replace Tuck rather than the goalie. I don't know if that's where you sit, but it feels like they almost can't be done.
I'm of the same mind. I feel like Buffalo isn't done, which is, you know, I feel like the defense is kind of squirreled away. I think that's kind of done. Forward, you've got a lot of guys, and a lot of them are really young. And, you know, a lot of, you know, Lindy, I think the big catch here is that Lindy likes a lot of them. You know, he really likes Noah Osland. Who doesn't? I think he really likes Konstantin Hellenius. Who wouldn't? When you've got guys like that, and he speaks very highly of Yuri Kulik, which, you know, hey, if he's ready to play, then cool. Let's go. Let's see what he's got. But it's a lot of guys. It's a lot of guys, and you have a lot of kind of questions. And I think the playoffs left you with a lot of questions as well, based on some guys' performances. Maybe it's like Ryan McLeod was a guy where I was like, boy, he would have liked to have seen more from him during the postseason. I think that would have been helpful. In Quinn's case, I think you may be looking ahead to maybe another, you know, what his next contract's going to look like. And, you know, given where things are going, I don't know if I like the future, what that could turn out to be. But I think maybe you have to start, and this is a thing for the GMs, they have to start getting their ducks in a row here, like maybe 2 years in advance, 3 years in advance, start looking ahead to like, what's this, you know, what's a guy going to cost? Where do we see our holes in the lineup developing, and where do we think things are going to go? And I think that's a lot where like Yarmo Kekalainen's got to kind of look at things and see where it's headed. And maybe that's why things are kind of in that quiet space where it's a little too quiet, you know?
Yeah. You know, what is your perception of what is the Kane thing right now? Is it wishful thinking based in South Buffalo? Like people start talking there and it just sort of gets trapped. I'm not being jerky about it. I mean, I just, you know, he's popular in that part of town, maybe popular all over town. Like it's an interesting idea. I'm just not sure if it's all not dot connecting because Here's the thing. I mean, we're talking about all these forwards. Joe, like I sat here on free agency day and I did the lines like a little kid would do, and I forgot Osland. I didn't have a spot for Osland. I mean, I don't want to put him at fourth line center. That seems stupid. So I've got Carrick there, and now what am I doing? So yesterday I think I stumbled into, okay, if the Hellebuck thing is still percolating – I don't know if I can include Luukkonen in that anymore. I mean, he's now got five-team no trade. I don't know what those who those five teams are, but I might guess that one of them is Winnipeg. I don't know. So you've muddied that up. So you get to, like, you just mentioned two of the guys, McLeod, Quinn, Mertka, something else for Hellebuck, and now I put Patrick Kane in Quinn's spot, and I put Oslin in McLeod's spot, and I'm done. There's my team.
Yeah.
All I got to do is make these two, complete these two transactions, one of which I think the Sabres have been working on for a month.
You know what? I'll confess something to you right now. What you've penciled out is something that I've had in my head for maybe about since this Hellebuck stuff really started kicking into gear. As far as like a foundation of a trade to acquire a guy like Connor Hellebuck, it's my own roster machination sort of ideas. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to move a Quinn, you're going to move in a McLeod, and it's probably not Luukkonen, so you probably have to move Lyon, which then you're investing a lot of money in a goaltending at that point. But you're talking about moving out a lot of salary, but also having to probably take out, Hellebuck's $8 million. You probably have to add another bit of salary on top of that and maybe signing Kane. So I was thinking, maybe you're asking for Eden's Alex Iafallo to be part of that deal or something like that, something along those lines where you're just, and again, this is just all, this isn't based on conversation. This isn't based on any sort of, information from the inside. This is just like
staring at the roster.
This is basically in between. This is like halftime of a Newcastle game at Fatty. This is basically the same conversation. Yes.
This is just so we don't get radioed on this one. So it's, so it's everywhere. But
that's correct. Yes, right.
But it's, that's the kind of like the framework where I'm like, maybe that's an idea that, that gets the conversation going again. You probably have to give up some prospects. You probably have to give up
something that's going to hurt, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right. Not that Mertka wouldn't hurt, but like something that's going to hurt.
Right. And a guy like Mertka would hurt a lot. Like that's a guy you're looking at being a top four guy at some point in the future. Maybe that's why you draft Jackson Rudolph. Maybe that's because you're kind of softening the blow to move a guy like Mertka. And then, you're just kind of rewinding it like that. But, to me, to get a guy like Kane in Buffalo, and I'm sure a lot of that conversation reverberates around Imperial Pizza down in South Buffalo. But I think the idea is I don't think it's as outrageous as it has been the last couple of summers where he's been available, because the Sabres were not a playoff team. They were not, let's be honest, they were not close to looking like a playoff team, but now it's like, they made it to the second round. They were a whisper away from the conference finals. They're for real. And let's face it, Patrick Kane wants to play in the playoffs again. That's why he went to Detroit. Detroit's been close. Now they don't look like they're that close, especially if they move Dylan Larkin. So if he can come home and it's available and it's open to him, I think he would love that. But, I think we know what Kane's abilities and skills are. Great offensively, great on the power play, great on all that. The rest of it might drive Lindy a little crazy, but I think for what he can do and what he can add to a power play, I think that's something everybody would agree is something that could help the Sabres out too.
So I know you've mentioned Dylan Larkin's name a couple of times since we've had you on, and I think Bulldog and I are both in the same camp. I know a lot of people. I don't think it's even on the table for Dylan Larkin. He's best friends with Jack Eichel, and it just does not appear to me to be something like a move that the Sabres could really swing. So I want to ask you more about just the general situation in Detroit right now and kind of the position that Larkin has put that franchise in, because he's got term left. He does not have the same situation, some of these other guys,
Werenski, where
they're a year from, a big payday. And if they're not signing, it's time to, the fire is lit. For me, but if you're moving Larkin and Kane's out the door and DeBrincat is in a position where he's a year away from UFA. So what do you make of Detroit and the position Steve Yzerman's in?
It's messy. It's really messy.
Maybe they missed their window, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. And honestly, they've had such bad runs at the end of the season, the last two, 3 years where, you're 2 months out from the end of the season, you're thinking like, oh, Detroit's back. They're going to get there. And then just the wheels completely come off. And, you know, it happened again last season. It happened to them every year now for like, you know, like I'm saying, like 3 years. And in Larkin's case, I think, you know, the Olympic success and then just being like, man, I don't like where this is headed. This is, you know, it's going to be the same stuff every year. Get me out of here. I think in his case, like limiting it to just a couple of teams makes it really hard to get out of there. And like, listen, I know you want to control your destiny, and you can do that to a degree. But boy, oh boy, man, like to just be like, yeah, Minnesota or Vegas, like that's it. Like I two capped out teams that have lots of guys on no moves. Good luck, dude.
Yeah.
And I think Yzerman, you know, listen, Yzerman's not a guy I would want to be on the wrong side of. Based on his playing career and how intimidating he can be, to draw a line with a guy like that who has to feel pretty emboldened at his position as an executive in with the team where his number's hanging in the rafters, I have to imagine him saying like, well, we're not going to move him if we don't have to, which is a heck of a thing to say for a guy that's like, yeah, get me out of here. It's a really bad spot for Dylan because you're looking at a guy who's probably going to get the C ripped off his chest and might get booed opening night in Detroit. And I don't if I'm him, I don't like that at all,
yeah.
Honestly. But like, what's he going to do? He can't hold out. He can't do any of that. So, I mean, if he doesn't show up, I mean, you're going to get fined every day. And then I don't know if I'm Vegas or Minnesota, I'm like, well, I guess he wants to come here, but like, do I want him? I don't know.
The five years is the thing. Like, yeah. I wonder, like, I'm sure he got advice ahead of time. It's not something that you would have done willy-nilly here. Just like, I'm going to just tell him I want out, or I'm going to leak it or whatever. But I'm just imagining him and his agent sitting on a dock somewhere in Ontario enjoying a sunset, and his agent just... Dude, you got 5 years.
Like, yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Maybe we brought in this to
only
five teams.
So much, yeah. I can do. He did add Dallas today.
He did add Dallas.
So let's give him some credit. I mean, at least he did that. So generous.
It's crazy to add Dallas because it's like, hey, man, we just cleared a lot of space to sign our other superstar guy for like $15 million a year.
Right,
so like,
right.
I don't know if we got the room for you here, pal. To me, it's the kind of thing where – I think if I'm in Yzerman's spot, I'm like, well, how desperate do you want to be? Are you desperate enough that you want us to mutually agree to nullify a massive contract, cost yourself all these millions of dollars, and then you sign for dirt cheap with one of these teams, and then hope that maybe you go to the playoffs, win a Stanley Cup, whatever. Like,
that's not happening, right?
That's never happened. You'd no. never throw away, like, what, 30, 35, 40 million, like, whatever, I forget what his contract is, but like, that's a ton of money. You're not throwing away. We're not talking Patrick Berglund going to Sweden and saying, forget it, I'm never coming back.
Right, like, right.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about a guy that wants to play somewhere else in the same league the next season with the same money.
All right, Joe. Well, let's all cross our fingers and toes and hope for some more news, which would mean more reason to call you again.
Because I'm all for it.
Thoroughly enjoyed this. I'm glad we didn't have to pull you away from soccer like we did so rudely the last time you were on with us. And by the way, if you're not, you're probably watching while you're talking to us. Mbappe just scored an incredible goal to put France up. You're not taping this and watching later, are you, Joe?
No, I'm not a lunatic. No, sorry. I would not.
Sorry. I was 99% kidding, but I just wanted to make sure. Anyway, thanks a lot for the time,
thanks,
man. Appreciate
Joe.
It. Joe Yerden from the – sorry, it just sounded like he was speaking there and we hung up on him.
You know, it's funny, though. You make that joke. My grandfather recorded every single Yankee game. Every one. And then watched them – I don't know why. He just wouldn't watch it live.
Later, yeah.
Later. I mean, a lot of those games are night games.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he was just for the next day – yeah. But it would be like we would come over and the first thing he would say is, don't tell me about the Yankees game. And I would say, Gramps, I hate the Yankees. Yeah. I wouldn't know what the score of the Yankees game is. But, you know, that's a different time. Again, you've never seemed closer to retirement. So
it hurts. It's just as simple as that. Mbappe, it was fantastic.
It was
France is
sexy.
Up
yeah.
1-0 on Morocco in the 63rd minute of their quarterfinal matchup.
It did look like a handball just before.
Mm.
And Morocco was not happy. Mm. Like the change of possession, it
Okay, I didn't. I did not.
You
catch
were
that.
You yeah, were yeah. in the process of asking a very thought provoking question. I was watching soccer when that happened. So
well, we're a good team.
Yeah, truly.
Nate Gary's in for Mike. I am the Bulldog. 803-0550 is the number. We'll be back right after this on W.